Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Legacy Leaders Radio.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is Jack Perry, Legacy Leader Radio, here in Midtown Atlanta, Atlanta, Georgia. I'd like to say, first of all, a shout out to all my folks down in Peachtree City, Georgia, all those people in Atlanta and all the people around the world that'll be listening to our show today. We have an awesome and fantastic show in the studio today. We have Rachel Smart and her lovely daughter, Sarah Smart. And we also have Bob Pickens, former player for the Chicago Bears and the NFL. He's going to be with us today. And we got two very different stories, but you're also going to find that these two stories will be intertwined with each other as we go on for the next hour or so. Also, I'd like to tell you why I do what I do, and that is I like to bring heroes and people in the community that do great things for other folks, that lift them up and help people get to where they need to be in life and help them be proactive and help them motivate them, and to people that have gone through tough times and rough times in life who've been able to be successful and to help other folks to reach their goals and their passion and love in life. That's why I do what I do, and that's part of my journey. So thank you all to my loyal listeners that listen to the radio station every Friday afternoon between 1 and 2 p.m. Eastern time. Also with me today, my lovely co-host, and she hates it when I say lovely co-host, but she is. She's my lovely friend Karen Cook, who's with us. So
hello,
Karen,
Jack.
Give a shout out. Anybody you want to say hello to? Anybody in particular?
Everyone all over the world.
Okay.
Sure.
What's been going on in your life? I haven't seen you for a week
lot.
Or so.
A lot. I know. Okay. Well, you'll hear about it today.
Okay. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to remind you of something I saw today while I was prepping for the show, and that was a CNN interview that I saw that totally blew me out of the water today.
And
some of you may have seen, and it was the fake lottery ticket. Has anybody heard about that story?
No, I didn't see that.
Well, there was a homeless gentleman on the street, and a guy wanted to help him out. So he knew he had a lot of pride, and the guy wasn't just going to take money or anything from him. So what he did, he set up a fake lottery ticket and gave it to this homeless gentleman, and it was for $1,000. And so the homeless gentleman took the lottery ticket to a store, and the gentleman who gave him the lottery ticket said, well, let's go over to this little shopping mart.
Cash it in.
And cash it in. And so, but the homeless man didn't realize that the owner of the store was in on it as well.
So it was a setup.
And the guy got $1,000, and he peeled off the $1,000, and he handed it to the homeless man. Mm-hmm. And what do you think the homeless gentleman did with that $1,000?
I don't know.
He turned to the man that gave him the fake lottery ticket and wanted to give him half of the money back to thank him for being so generous and helping him out.
Really?
It blew me out of the water. He was given all that money.
Don't see that a lot.
And he wanted to give it back to say thank you to somebody that helped him and lift him up. So, ladies and gentlemen, those of you listening today, check that out on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And that very much goes into what we're going to, a theme of what we're going to talk about today on the show.
Excellent.
I'd like to start off with my good friend to my right here, Sarah Smart. Sarah, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Jack? Nice to be here.
Yes. Sarah, I've known you for a couple of years, and I've known your mom for a while. And there's a little bit of a story behind your being here today. I could not give it justice, and that's not the purpose of me talking today, but I know you could if you would like to tell us what trials and tribulations, and then I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to talk to Mama here for a little while. Go ahead.
Well, Jack, it's quite a miraculous story, actually. I can't believe the day after my 25th birthday, if you can imagine, right when your life is getting ready to take off, I was suddenly diagnosed with a massive brain tumor about the size of a plum.
Okay. Where were you when this happened?
I was in Arizona.
And you were doing what in Arizona?
I was doing my student teaching. I just graduated from college from Brigham Young University in Idaho as a teacher, and had several options of where to do my student teaching, and so I chose Arizona.
And while you were there, and if I can just kiss and tell for a second, you also had a little bit of a hearing loss, is that correct?
Yes, 10 years ago.
Okay, tell us how the hearing loss came about, or why you think it came about.
One day, I remember picking up the phone with my right ear, and that's the side of my hearing loss, and I couldn't hear a sound. And I didn't think to change ears, so I just told my mom to get the phone fixed. And she said the phone worked just fine.
With her?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and so what happened?
So it was summertime, and realizing that my other ear was fine, I assumed that water had must have gotten, you know, stuck in that.
Swimming pool.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, you know, trying to shake my head and do what you do when water's stuck in your ear, about a week or 2 weeks of no success, I set up an appointment with a local ear doctor.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm going to ask you, what happened next?
So at the ear doctor, I was surprised and, you know, devastated when they said I was completely deaf in that ear, you know, due to a virus. Because I just was there for the purpose to get the water drained from my ear, mm-hmm. not thinking anything of it. So...
And they were going to offer you a tool, I understand, that to help you recover from your hearing loss. Is that correct?
There was actually no, you know, hearing aid or no hearing device that could help with mm-hmm. my hearing because I was completely deaf. And hearing aids, you know, just amplify the sound
right.
that you do already
have.
You have
to have some hearing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they just gave me steroids for about 2 months to possibly regain some of my hearing. But, you know, after a swollen face and bone pain and whatnot, the hearing remained the same. So I just accepted the fact that I was half deaf and continue my life 10 years.
Okay. And Rachel, mom, what was happening with you when you were talking to your daughter?
When she lost her hearing,
mm-hmm.
I was surprised. I can imagine having to her to go through life and the things that she was going to do with only one ear, mm-hmm. being able to hear. But I know that she's a strong person, so we put together mm-hmm. and she's a solution. And she went forward doing some amazing things and turned outward and served and went to school to do some incredible things that she dealt with it, just like we always do okay. when we go through hard challenges.
And Sarah, while you were going through this, you went to see somebody about a alternative hearing device. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
While I was in Arizona doing my student teaching just a few months ago, my uncle brought up the subject of this hearing device that helps people with one-sided hearing loss. So I was curious about it, and the invention had only been out about a year, and one of the few doctors happened to be in Phoenix. And so I set up one appointment, and, you know, walking in, he asked about my hearing loss and said it was just a virus. You know, the doctors never gave me an MRI. Mm-hmm. So he ordered one to rule out any possible tumors. And I laughed, you know, mm-hmm. I had a tumor by now. Don't you think I know by now? Mm-hmm. And he said it wasn't likely, but we needed to make sure.
So if I understand, you went in, had an MRI. They saw a tumor and it's about the size of a plum, you said earlier?
Yes.
Okay. And so how did the phone call go with your mom after that?
Well, you know, being shocked with all the complications because the world-renowned neurosurgeon said it was the second largest acoustic neuroma, which is the type of tumor that he's seen mm-hmm. in over 13 years. And the complications, I was just, you know, devastated and shocked. I was kind of in denial, complete facial paralysis, you know.
The paralysis was before or potentially after the surgery?
After the surgery. Okay. So all these complications that could come because the tumor was so big, it was pushing on the brainstem. And so it was, you know, bigger than, you know, open heart surgery almost. And mm-hmm. complete facial paralysis. You know, I wasn't going to regain my hearing. And, you know, stroke, feeding tube, breathing problems, swallowing problems, would lose my voice.
This is all the stuff that they told you potentially could be
that could happen after.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So after, you know, finding this out, that was a kind of interesting story. Walking in to the doctor for the follow-up visit, you know, I didn't think anything of an MRI that I had done. I just was excited to get this hearing device. And walking in, the receptionist, who I'm assuming must have been new, she handed me a piece of paper with the MRI findings on it.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So I was sitting there alone.
So if I can picture this in my mind, you're sitting there alone, mom's over here, and somebody handed you your MRI findings, and did you believe what you saw?
I didn't. The first sentence that I read said, there is a large mass on the right posterior part of the brain. And I sat there and I said, well, I am deaf in my right ear and the right back part of your head, you know. Mm-hmm. But I looked up to see my name on the paper thinking they must have the wrong person.
They made a mistake.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Please have made a mistake.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. So then the doctor called me in and reconfirmed the news, and I was devastated. I remember getting hot, you know, feeling a little dizzy. All your dreams and stuff just stop. So. Mm-hmm.
The story doesn't end there, does it, Sarah? So when we talked to, and I did a pre-interview with you and your mom, you talked about the phone call with mom and then Rachel, what happened next?
I knew that she was waiting to get news that she was going to have the sound bite. And I was so excited she graduated to be a teacher, to be able mm-hmm. to hear and to hear sounds coming through the room. And I told her it would be her birthday present, her Christmas present, her everything present.
Combination.
Yeah. And I was really excited for her. And then when she called me, I sat down, she says, "Mom," and then she burst into tears.
Oh, and then that's hard for a mom.
Oh, I was far away. Oh. She was all alone. And she says, "I have a brain tumor." I was never expecting that. Mm. And we've been through a lot as a family, which I'll tell a little later,
sure.
But it was so, just to be all, knowing that she was alone and knowing that this was a path that we weren't sure all the things that were going to lay
mm-hmm.
ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And then we both cried together, and you know, of course, all the emotions that go with that. You sit down and you're dizzy and everything drops and you don't know the future. And mm-hmm. then since I've been through this before, I realized there's so many alignments. So I'm always looking for the silver lining mm-hmm. and the divine intervention, the mm-hmm. God's signature in this. And I realized that she had been in Arizona. She could have been in other different schools to do this. And she was in Arizona with a conversation that happened before with my brother-in-law, that he didn't know about a client that he said he was deaf in one ear and he didn't have a sound bite in. So there mm-hmm. was a connection and the alignment. And she was real close to the Barrow Institute, which is the largest and the best neurocenter in the world.
What a better place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So we see that everything was lining up perfectly. And I just said, "God's in charge, and we're going to be able to get through this together." So I booked a flight 3 days after to go meet with the neurosurgeon that was going to be performing. And we didn't know all the outcomes like she shared. We mm-hmm. didn't know all the details.
Right.
But it was not cancerous. And she had had this probably for 15 years or more.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So we just went in, and we were just shocked by all the complications. And just trying to be brave and be supportive to Sarah. It's hard to hold yourself together when you mm-hmm. realize these things. It could be a different story
right.
for her.
It's huge.
Well, let me ask you, when you went out to Arizona, and what was the outlook? What was the worst case scenario, the outlook of Sarah's surgery?
It would be complete facial paralysis.
Okay.
Her, it would affect her ability to speak.
Okay.
And that was what she graduated in. She's mm-hmm. very good at and
right.
tuned and so speaking.
Okay.
Right. Being a teacher.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's very right. true. That's a good point, right. Karen. So here we have a lovely young lady, 24 years old, going 25, has a hearing loss, goes in to get an MRI, tell her she's got a brain tumor about the size of a plum. All of a sudden, you're going 100 miles an hour in your life, and all of a sudden it comes to a halt.
Okay. Screeching halt.
Screeching halt. Yeah. Yeah. And we've all experienced those sort of things in our lives, and when ups and downs, left and rights, and we deal with that, and that's where the character comes in with an individual, is how you deal with those things that happen in our lives. It's mm-hmm. whether or not we succumb to them, or whether or not we decide to be proactive and move ahead and see what's the silver lining in this.
Right.
But there's a good outlook, a good end to this story, and but we're going to go deeper into it here in just a second. You went in for surgery, and then Sarah, and when you had the surgery, how long did they give you for recovery?
The predicted stay in the hospital was about 7 months, and I walked out after 5 days, and mm-hmm. I was off all pain medicine after 7. And the biggest miracle of all was
tell us
that I did get my hearing back. And they said, the doctors said, it was scientifically impossible because the giant tumor had completely destroyed the entire hearing canal. Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen,
beautiful.
I'm looking at Sarah now, all of us here in the studio. Mm-hmm. She's a very beautiful young lady. There's no paralysis. She can hear. She's got her headphones on, and you'll see the end of the show video picture here. Mm-hmm. So we're not. This is all real. And so I say, awesome. That's awesome. Total awesomeness.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can flip it back over to mom, What got you through it, Rachel?
Prayer and trusting God that He has a plan. But we're gonna use our faith and we're gonna pray. And I know it's called fasting, and prayer is turbo prayer. Mm-hmm. And so, what she went in to have surgery, I knew I couldn't do anything really but pray. And I'm alone. That's my husband. I'll tell you my story about my husband in a minute. But I wore an elastic band on my wrist, and I had a lot of people praying and fasting. And so I visualized all the prayers coming together and to a really tight place, like a funnel. Mm-hmm. And I put them in the plastic band, and every time I thought of Sarah in that surgery, that I pulled that elastic, and her face was very strong and tight, and her smile was intact. Wow. So that was the miracle, that she had her face, mm-hmm. and I kept putting all those prayers to use. And I know that prayers are powerful, but you have to tell what you want and, mm-hmm. and be specific.
Yes. There you go.
And so grateful that God performed a modern mm-hmm. miracle with no soundbite to hear. It was a miracle.
Wow. Yeah.
So Sarah, what's the next steps now? What's happening in your life now as far as school, education? And
What's on your agenda?
Yeah.
Well, I recently graduated, and so I don't have any more schooling left. Yay. So now I'm just, recovering. I'm about 2 months out, and so still recovering. My energy is, getting better, but not 100% yet. But in the meantime, I'm just reading some good books and
making progress,
enjoying life. Yeah.
Great.
And then looking for a job soon.
Excellent.
What kind of job are you looking for? We got a lot of listeners.
We got listeners all around the world. Yep.
Yeah. What are you looking for? Tell me, what are you looking for? Come on.
Well, I'm passionate about teaching and helping teenagers. So, my major is in secondary education. Middle and high schoolers, and Spanish and English to mm-hmm. English language learners. And okay. So I'm passionate about both.
Okay. Good.
So, you walk into, let's say, Stars Mill High School, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you got 1,000 students in there, and they're all teenagers. What would you tell them? What insight or advice would you give them about being tenacious and moving forward in their lives?
There's so many things you could say, but I think if there is one, I would say you can do hard things. Don't give up. Life, there's so many things and unexpected things that are thrown
right.
out at you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you believe in yourself and you believe in, God, that He can help you, anything's possible.
Excellent.
Rachel, I've known you for a few years now. And you've had a couple of tragedies in your life. And I would consider what Sarah went through is a little bit of a tragedy, but also we've come on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had a couple of things that have happened to you in your life. One story that sticks into my mind in particular, and the loss of a loved one, and how you were able to see that and overcome that. And would you like to tell us about that?
It's like your surprises in life, and life's all about changes. And when I was 34, I have 4 beautiful daughters. Sarah's here, but I have 4 daughters. And my role after being married was being a full-time mom. Mm-hmm. And when I was 34 years of age, my husband, Dave, who was 37, he was a tip-top athlete, never hardly sick in his life. He was suddenly, without warning or little warning, diagnosed with terminal adrenal cancer and given 6 short months to live.
Oh, that was a shock. Had to have been a huge shock for you.
You don't plan for things like that.
No.
You think your life's going to go on and live to be 80 to 100 years old
right.
and be together. And it was something we never planned on. And it was, definitely have to stop and take a look at what is going on and the stories that are being laid out, because it's your life. And so we went to the doctor, the medical doctors, and it was because it was such a rare tumor. They gave us no hope in the medical arena. They said the cancer had started in the adrenal, and it had grown to the size of a large grapefruit.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was spread all out throughout his whole entire body.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just right at the beginning of the symptoms. And we went to go home to live the best we could for as long as we could. And then we were very prayerful. We're a Christian family, and we really started looking at alternative and the power of your body to heal itself and create its own internal pharmacy. And we started learning about the ability for the body to heal, and we got into raw fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. We started juicing our fruits and vegetables by the gallons, got rid of the junk food, and got our mental state right, dealing with stress and prayer. And we also incorporated another way to juice raw fruits and vegetables and concentrate to get the wider variety and vine ripe quality to be that bridge to heal. And miracles began to happen. We saw how food gives the edge on life, and his life was extended for over 8 wonderful additional years with nearly optimal health.
So let me get this straight. 6 months was he was given, but you, through what you went through and through
the changes they made,
mm-hmm. 8 years.
Yes. Wow. So through that time, you know, I went to school to be a naturopath, and I was doing everything that I was learning with his training. And so I saw food. I saw how to deal with the mind, meditation, prayer, and of course, all the things, all the support, all the people that came together to rally and to be compassionate. And food is the I call it God's chemotherapy, and it's really his blessing, his power.
Okay. Okay, I want to make sure we get this right, because Karen and I were going over this before the show. All right, neuropath.
Yes.
Okay, I've heard the name many, many times. Tell us about that.
Naturopath.
It's naturopath. I'm sorry. Okay, see? We rehearsed this.
Well, there's two different types. You look, a medical doctor that mm-hmm. treats symptoms, mm-hmm. and wonderful, and there's needed. We couldn't imagine Sarah's story. We would right. have to have the doctors.
Right.
And the naturopath is a doctor, which we really, I term as a teacher, and it's teaching through natural means, through plants, through things that are treating the whole body to get its internal system to work through plants, through things that are natural without the side effects mm-hmm. typical of medicine. We're dealing with the root, and not the necessarily the symptoms that come out. And there's different paths that people take with a naturopath, you know, whether it's the hair analysis and, you know, the electrodermal screening and all these different things that modalities they use. I use some other, you know, with the education. I do a lot of workshops and really teach people how to solve, to really change habits mm-hmm. and detox programs to keep them on track with tools. And we have 6 pillars of health programs and ways to get more raw fruits and vegetables through, you know, the Juice Plus and the Tower Garden. And
tell me, so 6 months to 8 years, were there any medical explanations as to that? Or what were the changes, bio changes in David's health during those 8 years that was the pluses, the positives?
Well, we first found out that he had the cancer. It was pretty rapid growing, and the 1 month, you know, we full juice fast.
Full speed ahead.
Full speed ahead. We were making great changes in the family. We're all doing this. We need to change. We made it fun, but it was very seriously focused. And in 18 months of doing all that I mentioned that we were doing with the mind and nutrition, 90% of the metastases were gone.
Wow.
So the metastases, mm-hmm. meaning the ones that's mm-hmm. the spread in the bones, but we mm-hmm. still had the tumor.
Right.
So
you mentioned that you give seminars and teaching and presenting, and I've actually had the opportunity and the honor to see you teach and present. What's your ideal client?
Well, there's threefold. It's, people want to look good, you want to feel great, and mm-hmm. above all, prevent the sneaky diseases. And that's the thing with, I always thought if you looked really good on the outside, then you were healthy. And it's the sneaky silent killers. Is no, my husband, everyone used to stop and ask me, is my husband Howie Long? Mm-hmm. Very fit, tip-top shape. And so my whole message
is, he looks like Howie Long.
So it's just really teaching people about cellular health.
Okay.
The internal environment, which you create that. So it's more than just being skinny and doing these things that are really damaging to the body.
Right.
So, Brother Mike over there, who's the producer, who's actually, and we forgot to actually introduce him. It seems like we've been getting.
We forgot. Did we forget?
Yeah.
Well,
that happens to Mike every once in a while. He is now. If I can put your stuff on the street, Mike.
He's giving, go ahead.
He's
why
giving
not?
Me that.
Do it.
He's actually going through a transformation, a personal transformation in his life. It's very similar to what, very similar to what Rachel is talking about. And do you want to tell us? Ladies and gentlemen, his face is turning red.
I'm trying to figure out what you're referring to.
What exactly are you referring to?
My
with health.
Detox,
health?
My
yes.
weight loss?
Yes, please.
I was eating really, really bad for like years. Just, you know, busy going from one job to another job and, you know, school, you get off track. And I gained a lot of weight. And so actually I just started a new program, which is, you know, just about the internal chemistry that you're talking about. And I've lost already 20 pounds in, you know, just under 4 weeks. So mm-hmm. it's incredible to see. I mean, it's plenty of food, no starvation. So what you're saying is totally believable on my end. It's all about what you eat, you know, not necessarily, you know, how much is important, but it's about what you eat and making sure that you don't pollute your body with things that can just really damage it.
That's right. True. Mm-hmm. Eat food, not too much, mostly plants.
Lots of veggies.
Plant-based. There you go.
Rachel, what impact have you had on the community with your programs? I know you've been at it for a couple of years now. Tell me some aha stories. Tell me some moments.
Oh, you know, people, I just recently did something at a corporate setting, and a lady that had cancer for 2 years, just seeing the power of what food does to heal and to extend life, because we're not going to live forever, but we can extend that life and not speed it up. I've helped children that, you know, that are simple as not going to the bathroom and not, they're getting so much brown food, lack of fiber, and just parents come in tears after our help with the coaching, in tears saying their daughter is actually going to the restroom, or whether it's a skin problem. And I had one of my pharmacist connections, she had spent 2 years trying to get her son to get rid of the eczema, and went to set up an appointment to go to an Emory specialist. Mm-hmm. But in that midst of the time, I was helping her get some things turned around, and in mm-hmm. 2 weeks, no symptoms.
He didn't need to go.
No.
Wow.
But some of it's really serious, but I always really want to target the mother. Moms, it's I think wishy-washy moms with wishy-washy kids. Mm-hmm. And we so, wow. With the alcohol.
I like that.
Sounds like a sales pitch to me. Yeah.
I like wishy-washy moms and wishy-washy kids.
Yes.
Also, I'd like to say wishy-washy dads. Wishy-washy sons as well. So on
what about the helicopter mom?
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Oh,
there you go.
Yeah, saving.
Helicopters are up here.
Yeah, very. Yeah, that's a good point.
Let me add something to you.
Sure.
I suffered the loss of a wife after 34 years. Mm-hmm. The difference that we had is that we talked about death and life after death and, you know, your responsibility to yourself and carrying on whatever legacy you want to work with. Mm-hmm. And I was blessed enough to meet another lady who came into my life that is like not losing a step, if you can do that.
Right.
Because I'm also the guy that pulls the plug in the family when people. And somebody has to do it, because the quality of life, when you see people laying there, and it's not a matter of a disease, but it's old age and lack of care and spiritual deterioration. I guess God has blessed me with that kind of capacity to deal with those things. Mm-hmm. So I treat death a little differently than most people. I treat it as a celebration and a cleansing, and kind of enables me to meet some of the challenges with the circles I run in.
So okay.
I have a pretty good sense of what you were talking about.
Very good. Thanks. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Very insightful.
That's a tough one, and I can relate to that too, Bob, because being the only and the son in my family, then I've recently have gone through that with the loss of my dad. It's January 15th last year, and I went through that with my lovely mother, I get that, and if you know how it's going to end, why the hell don't we do something about it now? You know, if you know how it's going to end with all the studying, all the research, mm-hmm. and all the stuff, and it's people like Rachel and Bob here who uplift other people and help them.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you know how it's going to end, if you keep doing the same, damn things over and over again, why don't you change it? And I will always find that to be the biggest challenge.
Some of us are. We're changing. We're making changes.
Well, when you said bizarre, then you pointed right to me.
Speaking of bizarre, I was like, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. Just a little
nice.
Bizarre.
Be nice.
Well, I think the things too, change is whether you're inspired to change, whether you're desperate to change, and that's where that comes from. And hopefully it comes from both. When I ask the question, what I love is when you have health, you have hope, and when you have hope, you have everything. And it's about spiritual guidance and mentoring. And mm-hmm. when people get to change their health, they get to do what they're born to do. And that's the magic, and that's the mm-hmm. message in all.
Well,
that.
Don't you also find, and Bob, this is for you as well, is that when the person, when their health is better and they feel good about themselves and their outlook with other people and how they interact with other people is going to be totally different as well, and very, mm-hmm. very positive. And I've Sarah, jump in there whenever you want to, honey. So, you know.
It's personal, personal transformation.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely.
That's
Well, if I work out, I don't hurt. And I have arthritis mm-hmm. everywhere you could have it. And as I get back into the mode, I'm a caregiver because my wife had these knee replacements, so I found excuses for not continuing my regimen.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, the light bulb says, you got to keep going, dude, because you know, you got fewer days here than you had, so let's make the best of it.
Yeah,
and I look at life poetically. I'm not, I don't look at, again, death as the final episode. I think it's the first stage to the rest of your existence, wherever it is.
I'm okay.
Not trying to say where you go, where you don't go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Did you have something else? Okay.
No, my wife says I don't put periods at the end of my sentences. I said, well, that's the way I am.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you, Bob. No. For you, Bob. Hey, real quick, Rachel, as you mentioned, you have four daughters. We have one here. Is there anybody you want to say hello to while we're talking live on the radio here?
Oh, it's my Stephanie is in Texas, and my two grandsons, and my son-in-law, and then Megan's in Utah. Hello to Megan. Mm-hmm. And then Michelle, she's in school, but she just got accepted to Georgia State in the music
hey,
program.
Hey, congratulations. Congrats. Good, good. Congratulations to her. Okay. Nice. Anybody you want to say hello to, Sarah?
The same people.
Good answer. Good answer. And how's Miss Gina doing today?
I don't know. I didn't talk to her.
You know she's listening right now. So and also our friends down in Peachtree City, Georgia. Also, I got to say hello to folks in Tucson, Arizona, as well as my folks.
Hello, Tucson. Arizona.
Yeah. And anybody you want to say hello to?
While we're good.
If we can switch gears here, and I also encourage both of you to interact with each other, mm-hmm. and as we're going to talk a little bit to Bob, and
yes,
and
we are.
Yeah, it's
Bob.
You're up, and please, yes. Rachel and Sarah, get on in here as well. And I'm going to turn it over to Sister Karen.
Thank
here real
you,
quick.
Jack. Mm-hmm. You're so kind, Bob. Let's start before your 30-year successful business career. Before you were an Olympian, before you were drafted by the Bears. You were a little fat boy behind the piano.
Absolutely.
I want you to tell us that story.
It's an interesting story because I tell you, it taught me resilience. It taught me to dream and become pretty much self-reliant. I want to say it the right way. I don't need a whole lot of people around me to feel good about what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I really don't. Because if you know where you're trying to get to, typically, you have measures in place to measure how closely you came to achieving your goal.
Right.
The little fat boy was an interesting guy. He was a little
Tell us about him.
It was September 9th, 1951.
Mm-hmm.
8-year-old. I've retermed it to being incarcerated at 8. That's the book I'm going to write.
Okay.
Incarcerated at 8. I had a teacher, black school. At that time, most teachers were white. Coming from wherever they came from to the community to sometimes really try to educate the children
mm-hmm.
and other times collect the check. I wasn't sure what this teacher was doing.
Mm-hmm.
All I know is that the second day of school, the class walked in, you walk up the stairs, you go left, right. The class went left, and Miss whatever name is what said, Mr. Pickens, I have a special seat for you. So, in the old days, they had pianos in the room because the music and everything was in one spot. Mm-hmm. It was one room. So she sat me behind that piano. And I said, oh, okay, so I'm here for a day or two. She did not let me come from behind that piano every day of my third grade experience till the end of that school year. And I never told my parents. Never did.
Did you ever find out why she...
No, because I was at a stage in life, and she was at another level. You didn't question them; you just did what they said.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, when I lay in a bed, I said, "I wish she could see me now." You know, because she had decided that I was of no value.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. In her mind, I was of no value. I was a pest. I was precocious. Maybe I was, you know. But second day of school, you get put behind a piano for the rest of the year.
Right.
I don't think my track record was that bad. It could have been. I don't know. But yet and still, to deny a child an opportunity to interact with the other children. I'm not, the educational component is not the issue. Mm-hmm. I was totally isolated socially. Didn't play with the kids on the playground, had to stay in the room. You know, I learned how to be very creative spiritually. I was always looking at the light at the end of the tunnel saying it's going to get bigger and bigger, and it did as I went forward. But it allowed me to develop some internal strengths that as I got older, they were in place to enable me to go to the next steps in life.
Right. So that year that you had to spend behind the piano, that didn't turn you...
No, I didn't come from behind the, piano angry.
There you go.
If I could just clarify, she was putting you behind the piano to isolate you, keep you out under control, or because she didn't want you to integrate or be with the rest of the group?
Under control, because I was precocious. I was mm-hmm. active. I mean, I was, you know... Yeah. Questioning, ask questions, and you know, and I'm sure I disrupted class sometimes, you know. But as I think about, you know, having to sit behind a piano for a year, that is truly unjust punishment. I mean, for mm-hmm. any child,
right,
to be denied the opportunity to not necessarily be educated, but educated academically, but more importantly, develop social skills that will carry
you through
life.
Yeah. It just gives you more opportunity to act out and be, you know, something that stands out. I mean, if you're not with everybody else, you don't learn those qualities. And on top of that, anything you do say is going to be an outburst because you're not getting any attention anyway.
No, right. And I also, when I did have a chance to play, I didn't appreciate the playground till later life, but the playground is where you learn your social skills,
mm-hmm.
period. I mean, you can cut it any way you want to. You learn how to share. You learn how to get in line. You learn how to fight for your position. You learn how to bully, mm-hmm. How to accept being bullied. I was bullied all my life, too, because I was a little fat, slubbing and didn't want to fight, but the fastest guy in the neighborhood, nobody could catch me when they chased me.
Really?
And that's the whole story there. You know, I went through mm-hmm. you know, life with one or two friends, and nobody wanted to choose me for their team. And
because they thought you couldn't play?
They just never gave me a chance to play. And when I went to high school, the first day of school, I decided that I wanted to be the bully. And so in the old days, you used to have pencil lines where you get your supplies before school starts. So there was a pencil line. And I decided I'm a bully up in there. So I pushed on. And at that time, I was 5'7", 275 pounds. I was a pretty mm-hmm. big kid. So I pushed up in the line, and out of the back came a voice, says, "Where are you going, big boy?" He said, "Yeah, I'm talking to you." And you could hear in the voice that it was a serious voice. I mm-hmm. said, "Well, I'm getting in line." He said, "Oh, no, you're not. You're getting at the back of the line." So I got back there where this guy was standing. His name is Mr. George. That's the guy that everybody has in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "If you're so bad, come on out for wrestling." I hadn't played football because I had a heart murmur. The doctor wouldn't pass me. But she passed me for wrestling. I can never figure that out. So long story short, I engaged in wrestling. I grew. I lost 70 pounds. I became a state champ, an Olympic wrestler. All because a man challenged me when I was putting my foot in the wrong arena.
Right.
If he would have never said anything to me and just let me bully up in there, it's a good chance that I never would have been blessed with the experiences that I've had, and I've had many. I've had everyone you could ever imagine.
You know, that's so interesting that you said that, because we were talking about, you know, bullying before the show, and we were talking about how important it is, at least I believe, it's important to be bullied and to get caught bullying. Because that teaches you two lessons. It teaches you you're doing something wrong. It teaches you how it feels when it happens. And so I think that, you know, you getting caught, like you said, trying to bully into the front of the line, I mean, that's huge. I mean, it put you on a path that for positive, and then you had the experience of knowing what it was like to be bullied, and you didn't need to bully people to feel better about yourself.
Well, right. As a matter of fact, after I wrestled and started losing weight, I went back to the playground, the field house, and there was a guy named Eddie Akins. I remember him as
hello, that's Eddie.
You always know Eddie.
Yeah, it's funny how we remember a certain name.
Right.
Shout out to Eddie.
I used to have to pay to get in. You know, where's, you know, quarter, dime, what you got, Big Bobby. They call me Big Bobby because I had a cousin who was smaller than me named Bobby also. So this time I go back. I'd been wrestling a little bit, and this time I go back over and hang out for a bit, shoot some pool. So Eddie was at the door, and he said, I walked in, "Big Bobby, where's my quarter?" And I said, Eddie, the days of quarters are all over. Oh, man, you know, I was just kidding with you. You know, it was no deal. You know, you don't take it personal. You know,
the bully was all gone.
Yeah, the bully
was gone. It's just business.
Because I had, changed stature.
Yeah.
I didn't walk with the same insecure
stride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all I said is that if you want to bring it on over a quarter, I'm here to take it to you. Okay. So, and it taught me a great lesson because my community, because of my not interacting with a lot of them, I was not part of a lot of, because I studied and I want to go to college. Mm-hmm. And I like classical music and I like a whole bunch of stuff these guys just couldn't relate to. So when I was drafted by the Bears, I went to college. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because I was on the dean's list the first semester. Probation, which means you got to go. So I got booted out of Wisconsin for 6 years.
Did you get distracted? What happened there?
I got smart, you know. It's not chasing the girls. Yeah, and I was,
Those girls will do it to you every time.
A lot of freedom. And what I'm saying, I'll say over the radio, is that you send your children off to college, but you got to send them off with character and spirit because they have to understand that there's more to life than going to the class, having fun, coming back, going back.
Chasing the pretty girls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I think that is good, that really comes about, and I see it here, is that the understanding of religion, whatever the religion is, the spiritual component of religion,
right.
Mm-hmm. A lot of kids come to college and lose it because they have the freedom and don't have to go to church. Mm-hmm. And that just means that they're going to have a little rougher time as they go forward because of the challenges like you had, Rachel. If you'd mm-hmm. have a spiritually, if you weren't spiritually sound, you would have been crushed and maybe never recovered. If I hadn't have been somewhat spiritually sound when I lost my first wife, I would have been, devastated. And yeah, as I tell the guys, I've seen some of my friends running around looking up in the sky. I said, they ain't coming back, man.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be back. So you got to mm-hmm. make a way for yourself here. But I've been blessed to have people who have been in my corner, if you may say, to enable me to travel the journey that I've traveled. And today, what I do is I work with Boys and Girls Clubs as a volunteer. I choose not to get paid because some of the things I ask people to do, they don't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's right for me to be paid and someone else is not paid for doing the same thing that I've asked them to do. That's just that's my principle, okay?
Right.
Mm-hmm. But my ultimate goal in life, which at my age is still fresh in my mind, is to create a pathway for my children to go to higher ground academically, athletically, politically, economically, socially, and health-wise. So I try to live a good life.
Okay.
Not an extravagant life. Mm-hmm. And I've been up that road, too. I've made millions, lost millions. And I'm happiest when I'm able to continue my goal of being a servant leader. Last thing I like to say is at 14 years old, I created a bucket list. I did.
We want to know about your bucket list.
Yeah, Tom. And first of all, it's not going to be the last thing you're going to say. We've got a lot of questions here. So go ahead.
A bucket list. Why I created it, I have no idea. But I have achieved every item on that bucket list.
Have you?
Everyone.
I bet there's not a lot of people that can
share a couple.
That.
Yeah,
still,
right.
The most. I'm with you on that. Probably the one that seems least likely that a little African American kid growing up in the ghetto would pay TV. You had to put quarters in the back of the box. You guys don't remember that, but was that I wanted to be an international businessman, and I was. I owned my own trading company. I traveled to China 6-7 times a year. Mm-hmm. I did deals. When they had the collapse of the financial system, I got my money out just in time because I was persistent. You know, that's the resilience.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
Boom,
yeah.
Boom,
yeah.
Boom. I didn't know what it was, but I kept doing it until I got what I got out, and I got away home. I've been in the real estate business. I got out again before the collapse. I've had business deals that have went south and looked like the end of the world was there, but it's a little light at the end of the tunnel that mm-hmm. we all kind of operate
right.
off of.
Yeah.
Keeps you on track, and you come back. And today I'm very happy to really tab myself as a safe play zone consultant for children, whereas I try to bring products to Boys and Girls Clubs and other service organizations that'll sustain the life and physical well-being of the children both on sport floors as well as playground equipment.
If you don't mind me asking, is this a place where kids can go if they feel they're in harm's way or threatened or abused? They can come to you or
no?
Or, no? Okay, tell me.
No. Boys and Girls Club to me is the most phenomenal youth and family service organization on the planet.
Okay.
I've been there 37 years as a volunteer in one way, one capacity or another, not so much in the clubs, but programs and resource development, connecting the units with resources in the community. I tell people now I got a book that tells you every foundation in any state in America that will consider funding a building or equipment. I got a book. I say, well, let me see the book. No, you can't see the book.
That's your book.
Okay,
Bob.
That's my book.
I was going to ask.
I just want a page.
I'm saying that because of my involvement in things that make a difference in people's lives, those kind of things become available, and they're given to you because they think you're going to treat it the right way and not misuse the use of it and things, which I won't do.
Mm-hmm.
But my basic involvement is in the programming and the planning of activities and functions for our children. I do some mentoring. Matter of fact, I facilitate the Boys and Girls Club Minority Male Mentoring Initiative in four pilot cities, and we're going to expand it further. And what I've done is connected the dots. I have the NFL former players involved, Morehouse College alumni, which is one of the premier HBCU historically black colleges in America. They are engaged in it. The model is being built in such a way that it's a turnkey operation. There's no heavy lifting. And we think we're going to have a very successful experience with improving the lives of our underserved, underexposed, and not served or not exposed children.
Mm-hmm. How do we get a hold of you?
My number is 773-425-3254. My email address is B as in Bob, not the word Bob, B as in Bob, NFL70@AOL.com. And I do have a website. That is www.BobPickens, lowercase, one word, BobPickens@AOL.com. And then there's a way to track me.
We just Google you.
Yeah, that's fine.
I have a question. You're doing some great things. You've done some great things. You've like you said, you had a successful business for 30 years in international trading. You've done real estate. You've done all these things, and you've had hardships. I want to know, what's the biggest turning point or turnkey moment in your life where you faced your biggest obstacle, and overcoming that set you up for the rest of your life?
Mr. George saying, where are you going, big boy?
That was it.
Because before then, I didn't realize challenges. After that, I had the equipment to deal with them.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And I've lost money. You know, I live a wonderful life. I have a wonderful wife. As I told you before, I lost my first wife after 34 years. Mm-hmm. Wonderful human being, servant leader, international real estate developer. You know, smart as a whip, little country girl from Wayne, Arkansas. And this young lady that I have my life with for the last 12, 13 years is of a same caliber. I wasn't looking for that. I wasn't trying to find somebody to replace my previous wife.
Right.
God just blessed me to be put into an arena where I found somebody who could support my spirit and I could support their spirit. I'll tell you a quick story on that.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone has ever heard of Eric Williams, he has been tapped the greatest statesman in the Caribbean, history of the Caribbean. He is the Prime Minister of Trinidad.
Williams.
His nephew is a personal friend of mine. We all went to Nebraska together, out there in the hinterland. Oh, I mean, I was in classes where they never saw black folk before. This was in the 60s.
Been there.
Okay. So, you know, so anyway, so Judith and I went to D.C. for a Boys and Girls Club event. So I invited Wayne and his wife to lunch, and we all had a good time talking. And you could always see something was under the, trying to figure out. Now he's trying to figure out, how is this lady in relationship to my previous wife? And so a couple of weeks go by, I get a call. He says, Pick. I said, what do you want, Wayne? He said, man, how did you do it? I said, do what? What are you talking about? He said, man, how did you do it? I said, Wayne, speak in English. He says, how did you find two in one lifetime?
Wow. Mm.
And I say, through the grace of God and by having a spirit that says, you don't have anything that I want that I have to take away from you, but I have a whole lot that I can offer you just from the grace of God.
Wow.
I mean, and that's the way I am. I mean, today I'm in the mode at 71 years old to pass the baton. Mm-hmm. If I lay there and they say, he looks great in that suit, and I haven't impacted upon anybody's life, then my life has been of no value. I'm not talking about family, because family sometimes you can't even connect with, but, you know, you have your greatest moments sometimes out of your immediate circle. And it's nothing that you ask for accolades on, because I always tell my wife, if you don't ask me, I ain't going to tell you that I played pro ball or that I played, or I was an Olympian. She's very proud of the moment and, you know, a great sports enthusiast. So it's nothing to have her say, oh, yeah, and he played with the Chicago Bears. I said, Judith, come on.
Well, I tell you, I'm going to ask you about that, because we're both kind of sports enthusiasts
here. Yeah, well, all of us are.
Yeah, everybody's sitting in here. And,
sorry, I have to interrupt. I had to have misheard you. Did you say you were 70?
71.
Okay, for those of you at home, he does not look 70 at all. At all.
Look fresh, Bob. Very fresh.
I got a young wife.
Well, I think
that could age you, actually.
Or he's probably taking Juice Plus.
No.
He will be.
I'll give you the secret. Everybody says, what's the secret? Why is your skin like it is? I said, because as a kid, I couldn't afford, you know, an oil, so we used lard.
Okay. Really? Oh,
really?
There was silence in the studio for a second.
Oh my!
And so when I grew up and was able to buy baby oil, I've been using baby oil every morning of my life since I was 19 years old.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that if you got rough skin, you can go get and put on this. It's something that
it's a process.
It's a process that you go through and you keep in place. And that I've been blessed on that behalf. So, go ahead.
Well, back on the sports thing, I just had to clarify that, because I was like, wait, no. I was like, headphones, they're working.
Well, I wanted to ask Bob one last thing.
No.
We had talked about this before.
Oh,
are you sure we're good?
Yeah,
okay,
good.
Hold on. I have to get this in. Is that okay?
Go ahead.
Is that okay with you? We had talked about this before, that those that have had successful careers, NBA, NFL, NBA, whatever, baseball, that we would ask them, what are you doing now to make a difference? So here's the thing.
There's a lot of guys doing a lot of good stuff. You just hear about the goofballs. Those are the ones that sell papers. The goofballs sell paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the misfits, the ones who do things that are totally off track. We got guys that have foundations. We got guys who personally spend their time in arenas. We have about 400 and some odd retired NFL players in the Atlanta region. We have a core group of maybe 30, 35 men who extend themselves to the community at whatever level that's available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Crossroads homeless men's shelter down here off of Cortland. We go down there every month and we serve soup. I mean, you say serve soup. So what is it? Listen, you would be so surprised what standing there and dipping a bowl of soup for a man who has fallen on his whatever it is, or a lady who has four children and no place to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not like you want to get a big check mark next to your name. It's that, you know, you have to be spiritually sound. We raise, we donate clothes. I'm at Ebenezer Baptist Church. We're on a journey to really inform the community, particularly the African-American community, but the community as a whole, of the impact of prostate cancer and what to do. We have a symposium that we had a few weeks ago. We're going to have two more during the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, we embark upon developing a core mentoring group at Ebenezer Baptist Church under the guidance of Dr. Raphael G. Warnock, our pastor, and reach out, first of all, to Hope Hill Elementary School, which is right behind the church. These kids see these big cars driving up, people getting out, going to this beautiful building, get back in their cars and go back to their homes. They don't really touch the kids.
Right.
Wow. Well, we're developing a process. Simple. Go read a book to them.
Get
let
involved.
Them see you. You know, you know, have different people come through the process so they can see different genres in terms of their concern and their interest of trying to improve the lives of these children.
How can I help you?
Excellent.
Just give me a name and I'll let you know. You can be.
No, I'm serious. You know, I'm serious. That's what I do. How can I help you?
Yeah, I'll get your contact information. I'll send you out. The other thing which I'm really kind of excited about is trying to mass together some of the young professionals in Atlanta to do some simple things. expose themselves, not in that sense, mm-hmm. but position themselves
we'll get you.
With right. our children. Right. Just let them see you. Mm-hmm. And I'm not asking you to come in no blue jeans and t-shirt. I want you to come in with a suit, a tie, which smell good and look good, and look at you be a symbol of what they want to get to be, but you got to share with them how you got there. Yeah. Right. It doesn't come
right.
just
share
like,
your journey.
Yeah.
Right.
I was with a young guy last night, and I won't mention his name, but he grew up in Atlanta. And he's a very successful sports agent, very successful financial planner. And when dude said what he said, I said, you know something? That's interesting. He says, I grew up in Atlanta, west of Vine City, and I used to look down there and see them big, tall buildings. I grew up looking at them big, tall buildings. Now, I have an office in one.
Hmm.
Poetic.
Yeah.
And he's a retired professional football player
wow.
who still has a spirit to mm-hmm. to invest yeah. in the community. So that I'm saying it's the whole mentoring initiative is kind of misunderstood. I talk about Boys and Girls Club. I talk about Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Big Brothers and Big Sisters has the most dynamic one-on-one mentoring process that I think that's on the face of the earth. Personally, I don't advocate one-on-one. I advocate group rotational. Group rotational is you have a group of kids in a room and you have a core group of people rotating through scripted, yeah. talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
But given providing a more diverse viewpoint about life, but here's an interesting thing that comes back when you do that. Is at the end of the process, the kid saying, you know, he was a carpenter. He was an accountant. Well, she was a lawyer. But you know something? They said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it must be something to the message.
Right.
The one-on-one mentoring, like I said, Big Brothers, Big Sisters has a great process. And the people that come through that, they benefit from it. But there's a fatigue factor you got to watch out for. I think there's a lot of people who fall out because they start to feel as though there's too much heavy
right,
lifting.
Right, too yeah. much. Yeah.
And we don't really profess heavy lifting. We want you to engage it. And right now, there's some groups in Atlanta, which are engaging in the mentoring process without having to do heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. And the first readout is that it's appropriate. I mean, yeah. it's working.
Okay.
It's great.
Same question I gave Sarah. If you're standing in front of, real quickly, in 15 seconds, 1,000 students, high school or even in their mid-20s, what would you say to them to move forward in their life, maybe to get out of some of their doldrums or get out of a low point?
First of all, dream.
Big time. Good for
Big
you.
Big time.
Mm-hmm.
Got a dream. You got to look past the blind.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've targeted something, do your research and plan. And last thing is execute.
Very good. It's actually
dream, plan, execute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the three habits of Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It's first of all, you got to be proactive, have the end in mind, and then do first things first. You've got to plan it, and that's what we call our private victory.
Let me dispel an image.
Yeah,
I played in the NFL. So, what I have to say is that football is what I did. Mm-hmm. It's not who I am.
There you go.
Very good. Very
Beautiful.
Good. Thank
Beautiful.
You. Very good. Very good. Mm-hmm. Rachel, if I was to ask you and Sarah separately, what's your theme song in life that would be able to describe who you are? So when you walk into a room, they're going to say, "Oh, here comes Rachel. Here's her song." Sarah, Bob.
To give you guys a minute to think, I'll go ahead and
you
share mine.
Give yours, Michael.
Mine is "Good Vibrations" by Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. That is definitely my theme song, 100% of the way.
Okay, all right.
Feel it, feel it.
What's yours, Jack?
I think I have another new one. It's by Simple Minds, the video of "Don't You Forget About Me."
Oh, okay.
Breakfast
I've not
Club.
Seen that.
All right.
I've not seen
yeah.
the video.
It'll rock it. It'll rock it.
Huh.
Karen?
I'm still standing.
Oh.
You have no idea where I've been.
Okay, got
But I'm
nice.
Still here.
I thought these boots are made for walking.
mine is quite simple because it's
What's yours, Bob?
Mine is quite simple. Mm-hmm. Blurred Lines. If you dig into what's said, and apply it to our current situation that we're in as a culture and as a country and as a world. There's so many blurred lines that take us off track that mm-hmm. we need to address.
I like
okay.
that.
I like that. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel?
You Raise Me Up, Josh Groban.
Oh, good song.
Oh, yeah. Good, great good. Miss Sarah?
You stole my mom.
Oh,
oh.
That's cool.
That's cool. I love that song.
You both you know what they say one. About apples and trees.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're getting close to the end of the hour today, and I would like
say it's
to,
not so.
It's a this has been a great show.
I thoroughly
enjoyed it. We've had Sarah on, we've had Rachel on, and Bob Pickens, and I want everybody to tweet us, email us, let us know what you think, and we love the fact that we have great guests that come on. We're looking at Mark Miller from Chick-fil-A coming on. We got Mark Josie from Franklin Covey coming on in a couple of weeks, and some other folks. Absolutely love it, ladies and gentlemen. To all of you out there who listened today, I appreciate your loyalty. I appreciate the show. I appreciate you, Karen.
Thank you, Jack, for
backing me up and being here
of
last
course.
Week. And 15 seconds, Bob. Any last minute comments? In 15 seconds, give me a come on, blow me out of the water.
He's okay. good. He said it all.
Rachel,
he left it on the field.
What you got?
Death is not the greatest loss or tragedies like divorce, downsizing. It's what you let die within you while you're still alive.
Oh fantastic. Wow. Right, Sarah?
Scripture that was guided to me in preparation for the surgery date was "Let God be magnified." And the last thing I remember before going into surgery was, you know, praying, "Oh God, this is it. It's your time to shine." And that's why I had such a miracle, is because I trusted. So trust in God, and you can get through your problems one day at a time.
Okay. Sister Karen.
Very good. I'm good.
You good?
Fame is like a vapor. It disappears if you don't maintain it.
Ooh, man,
like
what a way to end. Ladies and gentlemen, we love you all. Please stay in touch with us. Get us on Twitter, and we are out of here.